The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
KNUS Denver, the voice of the people. News Talk 710.
Our leader and president of the Kyle Clark Fan Club. This is Peter Boyles on News Talk 710, KNUS.
Actually, Jimmy Sangenberger in for Peter Boyles today. One more hour as we continue on News Talk 710. KNUS. Check out Westward today. I don't have time to really dive into this story, but if you've been following the situation with Nine News, I recommend you check out westward.com and what they have there reporting at Kyle Clark's home base of Nine News regarding those reporters that were fired. And just check out that story. It's what they have up there. Very interesting. All right. So today is Friday, which means I have a new column out for the Denver Gazette, and I will tweet it out here in a little bit on my Twitter at Sang Center. That's Sang with an E, not an A, Center on Twitter. It's entitled, Our COVID Authorities Are Insatiable, and talking about how researchers at the Colorado School of Public Health are insisting that we need another month of serious restrictions. And, of course, today is the day that Governor Jared Polis is finally, King Polis is finally lifting most of the statewide regulations here in Colorado and allowing local authorities to step up to the plate and make their own decisions. And they should all get rid of these restrictions, as I argue in the Gazette today. But I make this point. From the outset, politicians and public health officials have subordinated economic malaise, not to mention mental health, kids' education, and numerous other important things to the pursuit of an absolute government-led eradication of the virus. While officials may not say it aloud, they've clearly operated under this pretense that government mandates will achieve a sort of ideal outcome. Read, absent governmental direction, we cannot sufficiently mitigate the virus. Au contraire, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. We should not give these researchers, these COVID authority types, any more time. This is far beyond what we should have been enduring as far as trampling upon our individual liberty. As I close, at the time, that is last April, I knew the people in charge would never be satisfied. Here we are a year later, and that suspicion is confirmed. They are insatiable, and it's time we stop trying to satisfy them. Fits with the theme of a tremendous new book, a must-read, When Politicians Panicked, The New Coronavirus Expert Opinion and a Tragic Lapse of Reason by my friend, a VP at FreedomWorks and Real Clear Markets editor John Tamney, who joins us here on 710 KNUS. Good morning, John. Welcome back to the station.
Hey, Jimmy. Thanks for having me on. It's been so long since we did KNUS. It's fun.
Yeah, it's always great to have you, and I appreciate it. It has been a while, but I have to tell you, this is a tremendous book. When Politicians Panicked, why that title, and what's the overall premise?
Well, the overall premise is that is an economic one, that economic growth by far is the biggest enemy death and disease have ever known. And that's always been the case. Just the same, poverty is the biggest killer mankind has ever known. And so I make the basic point that when presented with a virus that some politicians thought was particularly fearful, they shockingly chose economic contraction as the virus mitigation strategy, when history had been very clear that economic growth would have been the only answer. Freedom that comes from economic growth would have been the only answer to fight it, because it produces the resources necessary for doctors and scientists to come up with answers to that which threatens us.
You write in the book, in the conclusion, quote, "They fought a virus with mass unemployment, bankruptcy, and desperation. What could they being the panicked politicians, have possibly been thinking?" Answer that question for us, John Tamney. What could they have possibly been thinking?
I can't begin to know. I think that because they thought that they could just disappear, that because they thought that just hiding from the virus would somehow cause it to fall asleep and go somewhere else, they thought it would work. I think they had no sense of history. But the scary thing about it is that when you look throughout history, it tells you why this would be such a bad idea. Go back to the 19th century. When you broke your femur back then, you had 1 in 3 chances of death. But if you lived, your only option was amputation. If you broke your hip, you died. When you were born in the 19th century, you had as good of a chance of dying as living. If you got cancer, you were going to die. But see, most people never got cancer because tuberculosis and pneumonia got them first. And so what changed? Why do we live so much longer today? Why do we die of old age, which is a very modern concept? Well, we do because economic growth created the resources. People like John D. Rockefeller and Johns Hopkins donated enormous sums of money to medical science that made it possible for us to cure what used to kill us. And so the only answer to this time around, if they thought it was a threat, was more freedom. Let's have free people produce the wealth necessary to come up with an answer, yet they instead panicked and needlessly destroyed lives and clearly set back health.
The fundamental point, it seems, of your book, When Politicians Panicked, is that we should be making, those of us who have been opponents of the shutdowns, the lockdowns, the severe restrictions on our day-to-day lives and on our economy, on our businesses, on our ability to go to church, on everything else, the fundamental argument that we should be making is one of freedom. You say there's arguably so much we don't know speaks yet again to the importance of freedom, of live and let live. Free people experimenting in 330 million different ways in the U.S., and billions of different ways globally are the producers of the information necessary to bring clarity. Wait a second. You're saying that we, the people, know best how to chart out of these types of crises much better than the all-knowing, all-powerful government experts, and therefore freedom is actually the answer, John Tamney?
It has to be. It is the only answer. Remember, politicians predict crisis. And then they fulfill that by taking away our freedom when we need it most. They take away our right to live as we should live or want to live, and then centrally plan it on the way to crises that always result from it. Let's never forget that when something's spreading and you don't know much, you desperately need people trying different things. We all know people. I know libertarians who lock themselves in their houses who have not been in their restaurant in over a year. Well, you need people like that. But I make the argument in the book that much more crucial are the people who throw caution to the wind, who don't abide the conventional expert wisdom. Because in not abiding it, their actions and the consequences of their actions teach us all how the virus spreads, what behavior is most associated with getting the most sick. So when you impose one size fits all, it's not just that you destroy jobs and businesses and destroy psyches. You blind people to the answers as to how this spreads because we don't know. Think back to AIDS in the 1980s. I make this case in the book that we were so wrong about. The experts were so wrong. And so the answer can't be we're going to take away your liberty. You have to have free people to produce the information so that we can know.
The problem fundamentally then is that we have these elitist bureaucrats, public health officials and politicians and governments all across the country who clearly don't think that this is a liberty issue. I want to go to yesterday. Dr. Anthony Fauci was testifying before a congressional committee, and Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio was grilling him, trying to get an answer on an actual metric, and also talking about the loss of liberties and when we get our liberty back. Here's a piece of that exchange.
See, what determines when?
I'm sorry.
What? What measure? What, I mean, are we just going to continue this forever? Or when do we get to the point? What measure, what standard, what objective outcome do we have to reach before Americans get their liberty and freedoms back?
You know, you're indicating liberty and freedom. I look at it as a public health measure to prevent people from dying and going to the hospital.
You don't think Americans' liberties have been threatened the last year, Dr. Fauci? They've been assaulted. Their liberties have.
I don't look at this as a liberty thing, Congressman Jordan.
Well, that's obvious.
As a public health thing.
I don't look at this as a liberty thing. John Tamney, that was not surprising, but it's kind of revelatory to actually hear Fauci say it.
Yeah, no, my only dispute with that is I don't think politicians should be asking the question. I think liberty should just be the requirement no matter what. I would be against the lockdowns even if you could prove to me that they resulted in saved lives. But let's think about what Fauci is saying. Implicit in what he's saying is that if people are free to live as they want, a public health catastrophe will be the result. That's what they've always said. We've got to take away your freedom. We've got it so that you don't over-impact the hospitals. But as you and I know, and we've been discussing for many, many years now, people respond to incentives. Assuming freedom were associated with death and people being hospitalized, does anyone seriously think that Americans wouldn't adjust their lifestyles as a response to avoid? Who needs to be forced to avoid going to the hospital? Who needs to be forced to avoid dying? As a rule, assuming our freedom were somehow lethal to us, we would change what we do to avoid acting that way. They never even gave us the chance.
Again, we're talking with John Tamney, author of the new book, When Politicians Panic, Jimmy Sangenberger in for Peter Boyles. And a point that you raise, and this is something that I was noticing last year quite a bit as I interviewed experts or people who ran hospitals and what have you, that there were severe limitations put on hospitals and making it impossible across the globe, not just here in the United States, but across the globe, for people to get medical attention for certain things, to get tested for certain illnesses or to get treatments for certain illnesses, including things like cancer, discouraging them from getting medical attention, or out in other countries where they were supposed to get, say, measles and mumps vaccinations, they're denied the ability, for example, because shipments may not be coming into their country of those vaccines. And so there are so many unintended consequences, losses of life that may end up happening in the future down the line as a result of these policies, because people, including young children around the globe, very vulnerable to illnesses that we know will kill them if they are not given the kind of care and treatment and vaccinations that they need. They're denied that ability. Talk to us about that consequence of these policies.
There's no question. It's an important chapter in the book, the unintended consequences of this, because as you note, stop coming to the hospital, stop coming to the doctor for these different things. We're focused on COVID. And so when you, in terms of cancer, obviously that can be truly lethal because you don't catch something on time. But you look at it around the world, suddenly the poorer parts of the world were starting to beat pneumonia. We're starting to beat tuberculosis. It's hard to imagine, but tuberculosis is still the world's biggest killer. But with global health authorities focused on COVID, they stopped focusing on tuberculosis, on diphtheria, on measles, all these things that are raging back around the world. Let's also remember that when the U.S. takes a break from reality economically and people lose their jobs, that leads to starvation around the world. So much of remittances to poor parts of the world come from Americans who people who came from around the world to come to the United States and work, who suddenly weren't working or who weren't earning as much money. And as a consequence, when we stop, people are starving. I point to an estimate made in the New York Times acknowledging that 285 million people around the world were headed towards starvation as a consequence of the reaction to this virus. It is sickening what this has meant. It's the worst human rights tragedy of the 21st century, all foisted on us by well-to-do nail biters.
The road to hell is paved with good intentions. I don't doubt the intentions of most of these people. I think there are some who are nefarious, but most of these individuals that we're referring to, I think, were well-intentioned. That doesn't equate to results or good policy or the right kind of actions by any stretch of the imagination. But there's a point that you raise in your book, John Tamney, again, when politicians panic, that I think is so important. And I want to read the chapter title. It's chapter 24. If lockdown critics make this a numbers debate, they ensure future lockdowns. Now, I talk about some of the numbers in my column today insofar as I address that the people who are insisting on these serious restrictions that they stay in place, the Dr. Fauci's of the world, the reason why they have abstract metrics, that they don't actually give us a specific number as to when they're willing to end all of these things, all these restrictive policies, is because they don't want to. They don't know that they're willing and want to shift the ball, and because the numbers don't really matter. And that's where you need to get back to basics, which is freedom, because they keep changing the ball game, the terms of the game, the rules. So what's fundamental, what's always there, and that's the tenets of liberty.
Yeah, there's no question. It's the penultimate chapter in the book, and I make exactly that case, and here's why. If we suddenly make it about numbers, and it's not that my book doesn't have a chapter on numbers, it does, because people need to see that. But if we make it about numbers, we're implicitly saying that politicians have the right in certain circumstances to take away our right to work, to take away our right to operate our business, to take away our freedom to live our lives. No. Freedom is its own virtue, always, always, always. And because once you make it about numbers or about threats and everything, well, if it's this threat and if it's threats this much, we should be locked down. We're setting us up for future lockdowns, because you know this isn't the last virus that's going to reach the United States. There will be many more throughout time, and we know based on that experts will get to easily gold politicians, say, you know, this time is different. We really need to take away freedom. No, this can't happen again. We cannot be forced to give away what we've worked so hard for ever again.
Well, and John, it's hard to take any of these people seriously when they keep, again, dismissing numbers. They're making a numbers argument, but then they're also not making a numbers argument. The people who want to control and have these restrictions placed upon our lives. Because right now what they're learning, and this goes for the lesson that you're making for the future, that we need to make freedom the prime argument, because in the future they're going to try this again. They're going to try this again and expect us to just take their word for it and not really even care about the numbers. And then those of us arguing for against the restrictions will be making the numbers argument, and they're going to be like, well, just listen to us. We'll let you know when the numbers are actually reaching the goal that we want.
Oh, you're right. They're going to always move the goalpost to justify the taking of freedom. So we just have to be clear, never again. And I think to some degree I think Americans more and more feel that way. I certainly make the point in the book that by July 4th, a year ago, Californians had it. No fireworks show. So they had fireworks shows across the state, just individuals giving the proverbial middle finger to politicians. You think about Joe Biden recently saying, oh, you know, by this July 4th, small family gatherings for barbecues might be okay. And I would say, oh, please, we've been doing that all along. Yeah. What kind of person would think that Americans would so easily be locked down like this? Sorry, Mr. President, we've been living our lives to the extent that we could all along. How dare you presume that we're so weak that we would follow your dictates and everything. It's just tragic what they've done.
I've played harmonica at like 15 gigs during this pandemic, John Tamney. I certainly have been going out there and living life while taking precautions, because it is a serious virus, and it is important to recognize that so many people have died of this virus or with this virus. Talk to us about that aspect of this situation, which is that this is a serious virus, but that doesn't mean that we need to go overboard as we have over the past year.
Well, it's a great question, and let's be clear. The more serious a virus is, the more important that freedom is, and not just because it creates economic growth and it creates information, but also if something really threatens, what's the point of political force? And let's go back to the basic truth that the New York Times documented. They always documented the truth inside alarmist articles. Americans started to lock down on their own long before politicians forced them. They started to adjust their lives. They didn't need to be forced to take precautions. And this was true around the world. Over in Germany, hand sanitizer sold out long before the lockdowns began. People were way well ahead of government. They were adjusting. And so, yes, you want different people to try different things, but you don't need to force it. And certainly the other thing about this, if we're going to get into numbers, the New York Times never stopped reporting during all this that the reality of the virus. The deaths were mostly associated, they always said, above 40% were associated with very sick people, very old people in nursing homes. And so what does that tell you? It tells you that America had made huge progress, and that it was mostly associated with old people, and the focus should have been on that. Instead, they decided to wreck people's lives regardless of age, regardless of level of health, and to what end?
Case in point about the adjustments that average people were making, John Tamney, here in Colorado, it was a few weeks where local governments were looking at doing their own restrictions, but they hadn't really put much into place. And then Polis hadn't given his statewide order. And already we were experiencing these the decisions of average Coloradans who were saying, you know what, I'm not going to go out so much. I'm going to pull back. I'm going to get the hand sanitizer. I'm going to do this and that. And before mask mandates were put into place, 75% or more of Coloradans were already masking before the government told them you had to do it. You don't need these government dictates for people to take the personal responsibility for the safety and the welfare and the health of themselves and their families, John Tamney.
Yeah, when in history, we have evolved as a people we've evolved as a species that protects its existence, that tries to prolong its existence. As you make clear, Coloradans adjusted well ahead of time. They were changing their lifestyles. They were going out less. They were going to restaurants less. They were avoiding crowds. I couldn't stand the very notion of a mask, but my wife was forcing me to wear a mask when I went out before any of this began. And so the idea that we needed to be forced to avoid behavior that might result in sickness, think about before this virus became, before politicians started panicking about it. Think about all the people we know who used to fastidiously wash their hands before the coronavirus, who used to always open up doors with their elbows or their shoulders because they didn't want to touch surfaces. Americans and people as a rule have always been careful about this stuff. They didn't suddenly need to be locked down or and have their businesses and jobs taken from them to be extra careful.
Right. I think that's well put. John Tamney, I got to run to a break and cut you loose. But before I do, 30 seconds. Why should folks pick up a copy of When Politicians Panicked?
Because in purchasing a copy of this, they will get the economic history of the virus, which is the most important one. There will be all sorts of health books about the virus. It was very serious that it wasn't. The only story, the most important story, is economic. A virus didn't contract the global economy. panicky politicians did. And so you need to know this story, and we need to spread this story around, because otherwise history books will say that a virus is what wrecked so many lives. No, politicians did.
Indeed, as you title Chapter 5, please do not insult recessions by referring to this as a recession. This was created by government. It wasn't the natural market correction that happens when a recession truly presents itself. The book is, once again, When Politicians Panicked. The author, John Tamney of FreedomWorks and Real Clear Markets. I highly recommend it. My friend, great work on this one, and thanks so much, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me on, Jimmy.
Thank you. Best of luck with the book. Once again, John Tamney, author of When Politicians Panicked, joining us. Jimmy Sengenberger in for Peter Boyles, 303-696-1971. Going to open up the phones as we continue with the final hour here on News Talk 710 KNUS.
News Talk 710 KNUS. Listen live at radio.com. Peter Boyles, News Talk 710 KNUS.
Gotta love Cream, gotta love Clapton. Good morning, welcome back. I'm Jimmy Sengenberger in for Peter Boyles. Entering now the final half hour or so. I don't even know where today, this morning, has gone by. It has just flown by faster than the speed of snow whipping in the wind. It is a snowy day. It is an icy day. That's more what we're dealing with here, slick roads. Be sure to be careful if you're driving out and about on the roads. So good to be with you today. Great conversation with John Tamney, author of this book. I highly recommend for anybody who really wants to articulate the reasons why the lockdowns and the restrictions have just been so bad, so excessive, so destructive, not just to the United States, but across the globe. Check out When Politicians Panicked. It helps to explain, too, as we talked about with John Tamney, why freedom and liberty are the arguments to make, even if Dr. Anthony Fauci doesn't believe that this is a liberty thing. 303-696-1971, our telephone number. Let's go to Peter down in Colorado Springs. Peter, you're on with Jimmy Sengenberger in for Peter Boyles. What's going on?
Well, I wanted to add something to the conversation you had with your guest.
Yes, sir.
Here in El Paso County, Channel 13, which is the local ABC affiliate, mm-hmm. every night on their newscast, they give us the numbers. And how many people have had the virus or have the virus, and how many people are dead, and so forth and so forth. Mm-hmm. And what they're giving us, for example, is, well, first of all, there's about 650,000 people living in El Paso County. They're giving us the total number of people who were infected with a virus since day one. In other words, they'll say 59,000 people in El Paso County have been touched by the virus. And I'm going, this is insane, because if you step out on the street and somebody hears this and you ask them, what do you think about the severity of this? Well, 59,000 people have the virus. That's not true. Of those 59,000 people, thousands have gone home. Thousands have been cured. Other thousands have gotten the shots, and so on. So I called up the station and I said, why don't you report the current number of people that's infected? That would make a whole lot more sense. Well, the health department only gives us the totals. I said, well, maybe someone in your news department should talk to the health department and say, give us what's currently active. Don't give us what happened.
Hey, Peter, they don't even need to call anybody. Just go to the website, look up El Paso County. You can see the data by the days and then report that as news. I don't know why. Well, actually, I do know why they're probably not doing it. And it's because they want to give you the most startling statistics that they can.
Right. That's the whole point. But, you know, the low information people out here, they think that's 59,000 active cases. And it's driving me nuts, because it's trying to keep you pushed
Yes.
Trying to keep you down is the whole idea behind
it. You know, Peter, your call is so important because you are making John Tamney's point that we shouldn't be making this about the numbers, because they can manipulate the numbers however they want. They can trot Dr. Fauci out there and he can never give an answer as to the metric and say, well, when we're ready, when we've reached that point in time, you'll know it because we'll tell you. You can't win on those terms. So you do need to make this about freedom and liberty and the role of government and the negative, harmful consequences of what the government's been doing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If Dr. Fauci told me what time it was, I'd go find the clock someplace.
You know, probably a good idea to do that. You know, it was so disappointing, too. Last year at this time, I was like so many other people. I was like, Dr. Fauci seems trustworthy. He's the most trusted man in America. I called him that. I gave him street cred because he seemed like – and it wasn't long after that that I started getting the sense that, wait a second, what is this guy really after? He's not giving – he constantly is changing his perspective, changing the rules of the game. I don't know if you like Star Wars, Peter, but I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and there is this scene – in The Empire Strikes Back, where Darth Vader goes, I am altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further. And that's what we've got going on here.
Exactly. Well, thank you for listening to me.
Absolutely, Peter. Thank you for the call. 303-696-1971, our telephone number, if you want to join into the festivities. Okay, earlier I played the two clips that I've got of Dr. Fauci versus Congressman Jim Jordan. And Chris Cuomo last night over on CNN, you know, the guy who was all given the most warm and fuzzy, heart lifting and uplifting interviews with his brother, the governor who published a book where he did a victory lap about COVID-19 and his tremendous success. And then, of course, we learned that it is his administration, Governor Andrew Cuomo in New York, that suppressed details about nursing home deaths. But we can forget about that. Just ignore that. Ignore the fact that Chris Cuomo, when he had COVID-19, didn't even follow the protocols, went out with his family and, you know, out and about and was spotted by a guy and gave him a hard time. You remember all that. I mean, it feels like a lifetime ago, but it was less than a year ago. Anyway, Chris Cuomo took it to Jim Jordan. He took it to Jim Jordan last night on CNN.
Solidarity behind science. We know that that's what it takes to bring COVID numbers down. And we know that is what is needed to end this pandemic. All of us know it. So what was all this, when do we get our liberty back, on Capitol Hill today by Republican Congressman Jim Jordan? It's people who believe what he believes who don't want to get the vaccine. Why isn't he talking to them about giving the rest of us our liberty back? Instead, he decided to blame Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, over when. Tell me when. When. When do we get it back? There's nothing wrong with wanting to know when this could all end. But it's hard to see how attacking Fauci helps. You know when it ends. It ends when they get our crap together, right? And you get the vaccines and you get to a certain point and you have too many people on the right who don't want to get the vaccine. Science tells us cases are rising because the variant is bad. And you have 23% of Americans fully vaccinated. Now, a lot of that 23% are the older and the vulnerable, and that's going to help us. But if we don't get 50, 60, 70% and we're not doing the mitigation, it's going to take more time. Everybody knows that.
Actually, I believe it's about 30% of Americans now fully vaccinated. But he says, solidarity behind science. Science is testing hypotheses and coming to conclusions about how the world works and so forth. You don't have solidarity behind science. Are you kidding me? What is it with all this? We want our liberty back. Look, I'm going to get the vaccine. I'm going to get the Moderna one. My parents have gotten their first shot. My sister has. I'm going to. Okay, he's not talking to me because I want my liberty back and I'm going to get the vaccine. But notice what he said there, Chris Cuomo, on the most trusted name in news, CNN. It ends when we get our crap together. You get to a certain point. What? Okay, let me ask you, Chris Cuomo, how do you know that we finally got our crap together? And what's the certain point? Bueller? 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 I'm just hearing crickets. Where's Bueller? He doesn't know. That's exactly why you get this kind of answer from Dr. Fauci.
Now, can I answer the question, please? My recommendations are not a personal recommendation. It's based on the CDC guidance, which is underscored.
What measures have to be attained before Americans get their First Amendment liberties back?
I just told you that.
No, you haven't given anything specific. You said we hope when this third. Tell me specifically.
Right now, we have about 60,000 infections a day, which is a very large risk for a surge. We're not talking about liberties. We're talking about a pandemic that has killed 560,000 Americans.
That's what we're talking about. And I don't disagree with that. And I understand how serious that is. But I also stand it's pretty serious when businesses have been shut down. People can't go to church. People can't assemble in their own homes with their friends, with their families. People can't go to a loved one's funeral. People can't get to their government, petition their representative to redress their grievances. Right. I also understand the First Amendment's pretty darn important. And it's been a year. And I want to know when Americans will get those First Amendment liberties back. Is it 90%, Dr. Fauci? Is it 90%? That's what I'd like to know. Give me some objective standards versus when certain things get reached, we might be able to get back to having our liberty. When? What are the numbers?
You're going to see a gradual. Right now, we're at an unacceptably high level. On a daily basis, it's unacceptably high, regardless of who you are. What you're going to see as more and more people get vaccinated, and we get over 3 million people a day, you're going to see the level of infection come down and down, and gradually there will be more flexibility for doing the things that you're talking
Where
about.
Where does it get to? When it comes
gradually there will be more flexibility. No wonder Chris Cuomo says, it ends when we get our crap together. You get to a certain point without actually saying the certain point or when they get the crap together, because the guy he's looking to for information doesn't have a damn metric for him. He doesn't have anything that he could testify before the Congress of the United States and say this is the point at which we can finally turn the corner. And so no wonder the sycophants in the media like Chris Cuomo, again, brother of Andrew Cuomo, Mr. Nursing Home guy, why he doesn't have any metrics and is just abstract and talking about solidarity with science. Guys, just have solidarity with science. Get your crap together. It'll be okay. We'll get there eventually. It's gradual. Might be another year. Maybe. It's gradual. We've been gradually doing these things. We still got more gradual ways to go. I'm beside myself, but not surprised. And this, again, underscores why Tammany's point is so profoundly important. About freedom, not numbers. Because if they're throwing numbers of deaths and numbers of infections and positivity rates or whatever, especially if they're, like Peter was saying, giving us data that's going back a year and isn't just what's happening right now, that means that they're just throwing those numbers there to try and get us to comply and to just come on board and be like, okay, we'll just wait. We'll be gradual with you. We'll try to get our crap together. Maybe eventually we'll get to that point. But at the same time, when you ask them to actually give us a metric or a number that tells us where we can stop the shenanigans and move on, they don't have an answer. How can you play a numbers game when they're not even willing to give us numbers? So we have to get to freedom. We have to talk about liberty. We have to talk about the destructive consequences of an all-knowing, all-powerful government that presumes to know what is best for us. Government has never done that, and it never will. But get your crap together, folks. We'll get there eventually. It's just going to be gradual. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger in for Peter Boyles. We'll be back one more segment. News Talk 710 KNUS.
News Talk 710 KNUS. Listen live at radio.com. When radio counts, count on Peter Boyles.
Join in. Start a love tree. Love tree. People all over.
Folks, as the love train rolls along, we're standing in solidarity behind science. Just as we have been entreated to do by the wonderful, the inspirational, the charismatic Chris Cuomo. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger in for Peter Boyles, wrapping up a show that, boy, has just flown right on by. We're just about out of time, but real quickly, let's squeeze in Greg in Denver. Merry Christmas. Oh, no, it's just snowing outside. How you doing, Greg?
I'm well. You were talking about numbers.
Yes.
I heard a fable on Prager's show about a rabbi and the angel of death were talking. The angel of death said, I'm going to put a plague on your people. I'm going to take 5,000 of your tribe. And the rabbi said, yes, but no more. That's all you can have. And then he counted the bodies. The rabbi counted 15,000. He went back to the angel of death and said, you lied to me. You took 15,000. And the angel said, no, I only took 5,000. The other 10,000 died from fear.
Ah, that is quite a good fable. I can totally hear Prager saying that. Thank you for sharing that, Greg. I really appreciate it. What a great capstone to kind of help wrap up the show. So thanks for calling in.
Good job today, Jimmy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Greg in Denver calling us here. Jimmy Sangenberger in for Peter Boyles, and I will be back. Be sure to tune in 5 to 7 tomorrow night here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Of course, Stephen Tubbs will be on from 3 to 7 later today. Tomorrow, it all kicks off with George Brockler at 6, Randy Corporan at 9. Don't forget, Sunday, we do have Father Andre. He was on earlier, 6 o'clock. Good morning, Sunday. Good Sunday morning with Father Andre. Of course, Deborah Flora at 1, Matt Dunn at 4 with Backbone Radio. By the way, just a fun little aside, it's crazy to think about, next month will be a full decade since the first time I ever filled in on Backbone Radio on 710 KNUS. A full decade of being a guest host originally here on KNUS. Boy, how time flies. Folks, let's just keep this in mind. As we look at the precipice of where this country is going, we see the suppression of free speech and the cancel culture. We see officials like the UN ambassador talking down the United States of America to other countries when they should be standing us up as the moral authority in the world. We see the suppression of our freedoms with COVID-19. We see all these things that are discouraging. But my friends, we have the truth on our side. We have what's right on our side. We have the, as Frederick Douglass put it, the saving principles of the Declaration of Independence on our side. Let us keep the faith and keep in the fight. Once again, I'll be back tomorrow night, 5 p.m. here on 710 KNUS for the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Tune in then and check out my column in the Denver Gazette today, my weekly column, Our COVID Authorities Are Insatiable. Have a great rest of the day. Stay safe out there. My thanks to Peter Boyles for the opportunity, to Kelly Michaels producing today, and to you for listening. May God bless America.